you know, a bunch of good government groups got together and conducted an evaluation of these plans when they first came out back in April, and the results were kind of mixed. You know, we found that some agencies did very well. NASA was one, for example, that just kind of, you know, really met their requirements in the directive. And there are a couple other good ones in there, too, but there's really a lot of spread. And so we asked agencies to follow up and maybe do some revisions. And so they did a second round. And what we found after that round was that there was, you know, actually quite a bit of improvement in that, you know, in meeting the directive, the requirements there. And so that was really great to see. And, you know, we're really pleased, actually, with the amount of actual collaboration that went on. You know, a lot of the – so each group that had been conducting these evaluations basically adopted an agency to evaluate. And we were just really pleased to see that there's a lot of – collaboration and talk and discussion and dialogue between good government groups and these agencies.
They actually learned a lot through the process, I think.
They did, I think so. Yeah, I think it was, you know, there were some growing pains maybe here and there, but overall, yeah, we saw a lot of really positive development.
At least part of my frustration early on was that they were developing a lot of these open government directives, their open government plans, and they sort of put things out and said, okay, help us develop an open government plan. And people didn't really know what to do with that. I think even the open government community didn't really know what to do with that kind of just blank wall. And I think what they've one of the things they've learned is, okay, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think about that? And that sort of gave people a place, almost a start of conversation.
No, definitely. I mean, that was there are a lot of questions going around. Like the administration kind of painted in very broad strokes with the open government directive. They let a lot of questions unanswered. I think gave agencies room to kind of determine a lot of things for themselves. And so that's kind of where this openness floor document comes in. And that's sort of a list of basic requirements that, you know, good government groups think agencies must satisfy in
almost,
order to be considered transparent. And
almost standard. So
exactly.
If you're going to have, these are the basics that you have to do if it's going to be, if it's going to meet an open government plan.
Exactly. And, yeah. You know, we wanted to step kind of past, you know, a high value data set, which is a fairly, it's not the, you know, most concrete definition. And we wanted to say, like, okay, we need to have visitor logs. We need calendars from top level officials. And we need, you know, robust contract data. We tried to, you know, really get some specifics out there for what we think are these requirements for transparency.
So let's walk through a couple of these because, they fall into a couple of categories.
That's right.
One is accountability and influence. What does this mean?
Well, you know, I think a big part of government transparency is seeing, you know, what goes into government decisions and what holding them accountable for government operations. And, you know, it's hard to really ask citizens to participate in a democracy without having this kind of information. And so, you know, this has stuff like lobbying disclosure forms and data, communications with Congress, calendars of top-level officials. You know, a really important one for us over here at POGO is actually a list of all Inspector General reports. And Inspector General, of course, being the kind of agency's in-house watchdog. And, you know, unfortunately, those reports are not, it's not often that they're put up online. Sometimes you have to wait for, you know, to obtain them through Freedom of Information Act requests.
And at that point, it's becoming, you oftentimes you don't know what you don't know. And
exactly.
So how do you FOIA something you know nothing about?
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of reports out there that we just don't even know exist. You know, if something, you know, if it is does turn out that it's appropriate to redact a whole report, that's fine. Just, you know, we at least want to see the title so that, you know, we know what we don't know.
Right. Federal advisory committees. Oftentimes, it's difficult to find out who's on these groups. Whether they even exist.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big one. You know, that's number 7 on this list is, listed their members and meeting minutes. And just making sure that the public has, you know, an opportunity to give input.
The second broad category is spending, the budget, making it available and making it seems part of the challenge here is putting it in a format that your audience is a bunch of different sets. There can be the real people who know a whole bunch about the budget, like you folks do, and there can be Joanna Citizen out in Iowa, who doesn't know anything about the budget. You need to have almost different levels of making this information accessible, it seems.
I think so. And I think, you know, another really important piece of that puzzle is contract data, really robust contract data. I mean, that is such a big part of the federal government these days. And unfortunately, there's a real, there's a lack of information out there about it. We do have some really basic info out there. We know who the vendor is usually. You know, there's databases out there that track that. And sometimes you get a line or two about what kind of service they're providing. But as far as what the task order is or what's in the request for proposal, important information like that that really helps you hold these contractors accountable is just really hard to come by.
Well, on the task order information, I mean, somebody please make the task orders so much contracting going through the task orders, and yet there's almost no requirement for transparency on those things.
Right. No, I mean, it's, some $500 billion or something are going to contractors, each year. That's just, we got to know that stuff.
The third category is something called records and data. What are these things?
Well, this is going to be a lot of stuff. A big part of this is Freedom of Information Act requests. And this is, of course, information that groups like POGO or people from the public, just that's kind of the main lever that we can pull to pry information out of the government. And unfortunately, once a piece of information has been released through a FOIA request, it doesn't go up online, usually. We think it should. We think that if that information has been requested and that request has been granted, that should right away just go up online. And that's not happening. So that's an example of one thing we'd like to see.
And then policies. It seems like a lot of the policies are out there, but they can be sort of scattered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. In a big policy, of course, is, whistleblower protections is something that we'd really, like to see enhanced. And I'm not sure if the connection with how a whistleblower relates to open government is that self-evident, but, really it's about an agency being receptive to feedback and receptive to ideas. And if we don't have, protections in place so that whistleblowers can feel, comfortable raising these issues, that's a real problem. That's going to really impede openness.
We're talking to Brian Rahia. He is with the Project for Government Oversight. We're talking about open government. And those ones, the ones that we've touched on, all seem to make sense. The two the remaining ones are participation and collaboration. These mm-hmm. ones seem like these are the golden. If you're going to get something out of open government, these are the two areas where a lot of the return comes from.
Yes, and these are participation and collaboration were, two of the core pillars that were outlined in the open government directive. That's written down. Obviously that is a piece of the puzzle that, is a priority for the administration.
And it seems like these can be some of the more difficult because they often can be scattered across a number of places. But also they can take a little work to actually get people to participate sometimes.
That's right. And that's really an important thing that I want to, say about this document is that we do realize that some of these items are, a little bit, this is kind of a lofty gold standard in the way. And so we kind of look forward to continuing the dialogue about this, because there are, let's be real here. There are time constraints. There are budget constraints for agencies. And so we want to be sensitive about that. And yeah, we recognize that, to do a massive employee training program might take some time. It might take some money to do that kind of thing.
One of my big frustrations has been that this has been largely seen as something between government and citizens, and a little bit overlooked is open government also can be within your agency or agency to agency, and I think there's a lot of real return on investment that can come from those kinds of things.
I think there is. I think there certainly is. Each agency has, different constraints, a whole different, tenor to what's going on there, but I got to go to some of the open government workshop classes that were kind of taking place early on in this open government directive process, and it was, you could really see the benefit to agencies of having, coming to talk to each other and figure out what they're doing well and what they can learn from other agencies. And I agree with you. I think that's a huge part of it, and there's a lot to be gained from that sort of collaboration.
And even from from this process, hopefully folks will learn, hey, if we actually share this information, there's good ideas that can go back and forth. And one of the things that I've plunked the administration on was the green government plans, the sustainability plans. Why not do those all in a public framework so we can see what they're doing? Why do they all have to go to OMB behind closed doors, and mm-hmm. then they work on them and come out. Hey, do it in an open way. Let us all, let them learn from each other. And it seems like that's the idea here, not to get people, but to actually help people do their jobs better. That's the real return on investment, it seems.
I think so. No, this is not just transparency for the sake of transparency. This is to try and improve efficiency and, you know, just make the government work better. And yeah, I think there is a lot that agencies can learn from each other. I mean, some agencies are satisfying some of these items. The NRC, for example, they have put out a list of meetings for their commissioner, yeah. their top chairman. If an agency is like, gosh, we can't do that. Well, you know, it's nice to, maybe you can talk to the NRC to see how they were able to make that happen.
One particular thing that you've seen folks do across, maybe a lesson learned that folks can learn from, can implement to actually improve these plans.
I think collaboration. I think, you know, taking public feedback is like a really important part of this. You know, I think working with good government groups, we're not trying to play gotcha. We're trying, you know, to work with agencies and make this better and bear in mind what, you know, their constraints are. And so I really hope that, you know, there just is more dialogue and that we can keep up some of the really great momentum that we've, been able to generate so far with this process.